Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, episode 8. The animated series episodes Beyond the Farthest Star and Yesteryear.
Some said it couldn't be done.
The odds against something like this happening are astronomical.
Some just didn't care.
I'll check it out after lunch.
What now?
Behold, gentlemen, the dawning of a new era.
Star Trek, every weekday on Nickelodeon.
Excellent.
Bizarre planets 5 days a week. Weird aliens 5 days a week. Dr. McCoy freaking out 5 days a week.
An extraordinary phenomenon.
Join the adventure on Star Trek. Now every weekday at 3, 2 Central on Nickelodeon.
Star Trek, the animated series, as presented by It's Got Star Trek. Star Trekking to the Trekking to the Trekking Stars. Right?
So they, in the 70s, like, by the 70s, the original series had been in syndication for, like, a while. Like, you know, like, it was on NBC and it got canceled. And it had become very popular, so they decided to do the animated series.
This is fantastic. I thought I had more time to drink my soda.
I went right into it.
So this was a film.
Some people wanted to do like a more sort of like child-oriented show. This is definitely like a sort of G-rated show, but Roddenberry wanted to do it so like sort of all ages could enjoy it.
Well, I mean, it's pretty, I mean, yeah, but there are some pretty heavy themes.
But
like,
yes, definitely. It's one of those shows where everybody can, you know, get into it. Like, okay, the Yesteryear, that was nominated for a daytime Emmy.
Oh, was it really? Yeah. Oh, that's why they showed it so
much. I don't think it wore. It didn't win, but it was definitely nominated.
So this was what? A Filmation Association?
Yeah, Filmation. Yeah.
Association of Norway.
Which is Filmation, like they did He-Man.
I
think they did like sort of other kind of superhero.
Did they do Space
things?
Ghost? Because it looked a lot like Space Ghost.
Might have
in a lot of those, like when they're moving their heads around.
The thing is, on the one hand, it's very common and understandable for people to knock the animation in the show because of there is a stiffness to it. They definitely have a lot of that.
That's the style of the day.
But I think, you know, watching these, it's very clear that they took a lot of effort, like in the bridge design, for example. It really looks like the bridge. I mean, they really made it look like on the TV show. And the other thing I noticed was the badges all include their division symbols. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they have like the kind of star thing for command.
That's true.
And then the science thing and then the engineering. They have like different things. And they animated that into the
different devices.
And they didn't have to. They could have just had the Star Trek symbols would have been, you know, the simple symbols probably would have been sufficient. But they included that. And the other thing I was thinking about was, in a couple shots, they mimic the exact shot from like the cage, and then they use elsewhere where the ship kind of does that awkward kind of.
Okay,
it's zooming into the ship as the ship is sort of tilting to the right to starboard.
Are you talking about like in the opening sequence?
No, I'm talking about during the episode. There were times where they really did more animation than necessary in order to match what was in the original series, and certain shots of the Enterprise flying towards the camera and stuff.
Well, right, because I was going to say in the opening, when there's a scene where the Enterprise is like turning, and it looks, it's like in the opening, it looks like that.
Yeah,
okay, there's this technique. I think it's called like rotoscoping or something.
This is definitely a rotoscope.
It does look rotoscope.
Yes. Yeah, like this the opening.
That's what Filmation did. They did rotoscope.
They did rotoscope.
Well, because I think technically a rotoscope, you would start with something like an actual filmed thing and draw the outline.
Right.
So they don't quite go that
well,
far.
I think not on the characters. Not on the characters, no. But I think on the ship.
Yeah, because,
it feels like on the ship, the way
so
the ship,
close.
The way the ship moved was like that sort of like Uncanny Valley, where it like looked like more detailed than normal.
Filmation,
it like gives you the heebly-jeeblies because it's like moving all weird.
Yeah.
Just the Enterprise,
right?
Somehow they made a spaceship turning look all heebly-jeeby, like those they did that in the 70s. What like
it's,
with like
it's a very
heavy metal and
heavy
shit,
metal
like, shit like that gives you the boobly doops when you watch it. You're just like, oh my god,
I'm getting
the
them right
Filmation
now.
Did the rotoscope,
yeah,
with real people for He-Man.
Yeah, and I don't know.
That's a different topic.
Did they really? Because usually the rotoscope is it's marked by just a high level of detail, so high because it's basically outlining like Patrick
right.
Said,
it's a bunch of layers of stuff. But like,
but they might have started with an initial model. But they started with
a real thing. They did that's He-Man. Not Star Trek. Same company.
No, but I mean, I feel like the movement. It almost looks like
the movement is very similar.
It almost looks like the animation. Like all the figures are based upon some skeletal like sort of thing, you know, which is what they do in like computer graphics, right? CGI stuff is you can like plop on all sorts of different outward appearances based on skin, on skeletal sort of movements. That's what it looks like between this He-Man and I swear to God Space Ghost. It looks like when they turn their head sometimes they're frozen, but then
it's,
they'll like turn their head.
It's a funny sort of,
and it, like, has this all has the same look to it, you know.
Well, so let's dive in first. We all watched the first two episodes of the first season of the animated series, Beyond the Farthest Star, which was the opening show, and then the second one was Yesteryear, which is a classic one. But I guess let's start with Beyond the Farthest Star.
That was written by Samuel A. Peebles, and yep. he wrote the second pilot for TOS.
I think he did a lot of
yeah,
things.
Yeah, he wrote other things too.
He might have done Miri,
but he did Where No Man Has Gone Before.
But the story,
he did an alternate script for the second Star Trek motion picture.
Unproduced version.
Yeah, like a different, something different. I think it was basically the same story, but a different script for Wrath of Khan.
Interesting, I didn't know that. Yeah. Well, the first thing that pops out in Beyond the Farthest Star is as they're approaching the alien ship, you realize they're because it's animation in 1973. They're really going as far as they can with it in terms of imagining crazy scenarios like this crazy, you know, multi-million year old ship that's got these crazy dangly bits and things, just something that would not have
300
been
million or something.
Yeah, and
yeah, that's what struck me first too, is how they made that ship, and it's like they totally just they got to use their imagination. It's like it almost seems like the person, and it's not the same people probably who designed it or whatever, but it's almost like you would like have one person who was like doing Star Trek and had to sort of use their imagination within the limits of the budget and what they could feasibly do at the time, and same person goes and they're like, okay, now all that shit you held back, you don't have to do that
as
anymore. He just comes up with weird shit.
Yeah, is if you can draw it, you can. Yeah, it can be
because like, that ship was far out,
and there were such huge spaces they were occupying on that ship. You know, and room they were in was massive.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's always awesome when you can like get the scale of how massive things are by like how big the rooms are,
and the energy belts. You know, like
those belts they were in produced like a yellow sort of aura.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, to show that so they can walk around in space and you don't have to give them shit for it.
And what's kind of, I guarantee you, my thinking on that is, A, it looks awesome and it's funny how hilariously more futuristic it is than what we get later, where really, they have to wear like actual suits and stuff like that. But I bet you $1 million the reason they went with that was because it would be too hard and expensive for them to actually animate spacesuits.
Yeah.
So it was easier just to solve this problem. And then they get to have them walking around like,
obey me.
Obey me. They're walking around outside. Not only is the spaceship cool and wacky, but they land on like just the outside of it. They just beam to the outside of the ship and they're like, we're going to just be all like outside on the ship and walk in here.
Yeah. Yeah, when they were first out on the ship, I was like, are they just fucking out there? Are they even trying? And then they zoom in. I'm like, they've got like space force shield.
It's
like air bubbles.
Yeah, it's like a funny air bubble.
Air bubble
thing.
It's
like you see on Discovery, like Michael Burnham's in a spacesuit. Like, these guys got some belts.
And Spock is in a spacesuit in Star Trek 1, which takes place after this.
Yes, afterwards. What? So yeah, it probably was totally like a budget thing. Speaking of which, though, like, so to filmation, their thing was rotoscoping, you said, but also they must have had a thing where they just reused, like, they probably had a whole like science sort of like philosophy behind what they put out. It's like, we're going to put out stuff that you can make 50 episodes a season on.
Oh yes.
And we can just,
oh no. Oh, if you watch that whole show, like there's all these like bits that are reused. Like there's a couple of episodes where these things come flying at them.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you're like, wait, that's the same thing that happened. And then you see it like a third time. You're like, wait, that's the same shot. That's the same like picture that they drew. That's the same animation. And well, like the same reaction from like Kirk being like,
yeah. yeah. He-Man had the same shit where there'd be this stock sort of like, yeah, roll exactly. He would do all
it's,
the
it's
time.
It's very, it has a very He-Man feel in like in other sort of superhero show cartoons.
Yeah. And I know that He-Man
sort of came between Star Trek and He-Man.
Yeah. And not to get too far away, just, I was just saying about He-Man.
Beyond the Farther Star.
It has a He-Man look, and like there's Star Trek dudes hanging around in He-Man.
And so now, He-Man, when I looked, there was like 50, seriously, there were like 50 episodes a season, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah.
They pumped those.
They pumped, I was like, that's
they were,
crazy.
And they were even shorter than these, Star Trek.
So how many episodes, first to go, how many episodes were there of like this animated show? There were two seasons?
I think it was 16 in the first season and 8 in the second season.
So they must have this must have been like a real side project for Filmation.
Well, so there are a couple things that make it different from He-Man in terms of the output. A, who knows, maybe they wanted to do more and they didn't get around to it. But I think the key rate limiting factors are they had the three principal actors, and as well as, you know, Uhura and Scotty, like a lot of the original voices.
They had the original voices.
There's a lot of Majel Barrett.
Yeah.
It's just really
tight.
So there's
that. And then also they had, you know, you were saying before, Dan, you weren't sure how many people were involved from the original series. My understanding is a ton of people, like all the writers and producers are just straight from
the writers.
DC Fontana writes the second episode.
DC Fontana, exactly.
You know?
Okay.
And Gene Roddenberry was heavily involved, as you can tell by the story structure, because at this point he's already sort of with a little bit more freedom. His idea, like we've talked about before, is kind of almost the Japanese style where there's no actual bad guy. It's misunderstanding, it's context, it's situation, environment, that type of thing. That's where the drama comes from. It's done much better here, by the way, than he managed, I think, in early TNG. So I think it was not as well constructed there. But here, the stories actually really work really, really, really well.
And you can tell that something's going right, because it does feel like Star Trek. It doesn't feel like they just like sort of like took a franchise and threw it in a cartoon. It feels like Star Trek. Like the writing, the feel, everything about it.
It's like, and also, you know, you remember those like Scooby-Doos where they would have like guest people, like it was like famous people, and they would just appear, and they were just in animated form. It's like that, because like, okay, that's a live action show, but then you're watching it, it's all animated form. These are real people, and they're like voicing over some animated form of themselves. It's very like 70s.
And putting varying degrees of effort into the job.
Exactly. But it has a surreal feel.
It is really surreal.
It's, yeah.
And Shatner, I think, puts a lot of, he really, especially towards the end of the Beyond the Farthest Star, when the energy alien guy is trying to zap him, you know, and Shatner's all like,
he's like, ah.
Yeah, he's all getting
prepare
zapped.
To activate
he makes some weird face. Yeah, I think it's earlier in the episode, he goes like, why aren't our scanners picking it up? Forward scanners, Mr. Sulu, or whatever. I can't
or like
Shatner,
Scott,
but like
Scotty gets like caught in
but
that.
But like he
thing.
Looks, yeah. But he sounds all worried, and it sounds bizarre. But with the way the animation is, his eyes sort of look over, and it almost looks like he has a weird sly smile on his face, even though he doesn't. It's a totally serious moment of him being like, "Our scanners can't find it. Look at this shit, Mr. Sulu. What's going on?" And he's just kind of saying it with his weird
look at this shit, Mr. Sulu. Hey, Mr. Sulu, are you seeing this shit?
Hey, Mr. Sulu,
I'm from Canada.
Canada. Hey,
they never used like Walter Koenig.
Yeah, I think he didn't go on the show.
They didn't have the budget to do everybody. And like they also originally weren't going to use Sulu or Uhura. And then like I think it was Nimoy, and he was like, listen, we have to use these people, because this is like Star Trek's all about diversity. You can't cut these characters out. So you do eventually, like, you had Uhura and Sulu, even in that first episode.
Yeah. Although they're not in every episode.
Yeah, because sometimes you have the cat chick instead of Uhura.
Yeah, like, she's a Cation, I think. Chick. Yeah.
Instead of Chekhov, you have that guy, Mr. Eryx.
The alien, the ET looking guy. Like, ET ripped off that dude, yeah, in my opinion. Because that guy looks like Eryx.
It's pre-ET.
Because it's 1973, yeah. Pre-ET. But the other thing to consider when considering both of these, considering the entire series, was when you read accounts at the time from Roddenberry and from DC Fontana and others, they say that this was in every way intended to be the last 2 years of the 5-year mission. I mean, that was the idea. They got canceled after the third season, and the idea was, how can we continue this? By that point, it had become more successful, but there was no way they were going to get the show back on the air. At least that was the thinking. So this was an alternative, and hence why, even though it's ostensibly a kids show, it does straddle that line. And you know, when you have these brilliant authors writing the stories, that's, you know, comes, it's just like a short Star Trek episode.
They did the voices, they recorded all the dialogue and all that stuff. For the first episode, they did it and they were all together in the studio. And for the rest of the show, everybody was doing other stuff. So everybody recorded their lines like independently and like sent them to the studio.
I think you can tell that definitely in the second episode. You know.
What was the name you guy you were talking about? Mr. Who? From
That's Doctor Who. He didn't go to
no,
6 years of time really school
Star Trek
to be called Mister.
The pre-E-teen.
Preteens?
Pre-E-T.
Pre-E-T.
Pre-E-T guy.
Oh, Mr. Eryx.
Mr. Eryx. Oh,
pre-E-T. I had no idea what you were saying.
He's an Edosian.
Proto.
Oh, that guy.
Voiced by James Doohan.
Oh, no shit.
Yes.
He had three arms. He had one arm coming out of his chest.
And the cat lady was voiced by Majel Barrett.
Your penis.
Yes.
Exactly.
My penis.
Wrists.
Wait, the cat. I don't remember the cat woman.
She's not in the first episode, and she's not in the second one.
One of my Google searches for Mr. Star Trek Eryx. I don't know why. I should have wrote Star Trek Mr. Eryx. I wrote Mr. Star Trek Eryx. One of them was Eric Bana or Bana or whatever. I'm sorry. Well, which is the cat woman?
She's a Cation. Maress.
She's a Cation. She's not in.
She has a Cation.
She's not in either of the two episodes that we're going to talk about in this podcast. But she's in other episodes of the series. She's in like quite a bit of.
What about
series.
That random like British guy?
And the guy with
Are
the
you
mustache.
About the mustache. That's what I when you were saying Mr. Eryx, I was like,
he's in the first episode.
The guy with the ridiculous
Mr.
mustache.
Mr. What's his fucking name?
Doesn't like, Kelly? Kyle. Mr. Kyle.
He looks like a fancy cowboy or some one of them fancy cowboys with who's got. Fancy barber cowboy.
He's a fancy British
guy. It just seemed like they were like, we have a Scottish guy. Why don't we have an asshole right. British guy?
Yeah, right. It was kind of weird. It didn't make any sense. Because
it's
like
a guy that's Canadian.
Because his first name was probably Montgomery.
Well, it's like one of the, it's one of those things they throw
that
out
was
there.
Scotty's name.
And when you throw something like that out there, you need to provide a story behind it. Because
he was doing the transporter shit.
You need to provide.
Yeah, he was all like,
we don't need we don't need a story about him like. Why he's in the transporter, because the transporter is a normal thing. They need a guy behind the transporter. That makes sense. But you got some guy who's got some out of place mustache. There has to be a story behind it. Otherwise, and it's not fair for them not to present it to you, because otherwise you're left wondering what the fuck is going
on
with that.
Both the voice like and the mustache are crazy.
It's when you watch a show and a show brings up a plot point. And you know how they
plot point.
And it's frustrating when they end the episode and don't tie up certain plot points. Like, I guess Lost or something.
Plot
point. But you know, but you know when they just blatantly don't tie up a story, and you're like, they don't talk about the story, they don't tie it up, they kind of like half present the story, and you're left kind of being like, well, the show got resolved, but what was going on with that thing? That's like that fucking mustache. They were trying to be inclusive.
I don't
but
remember
they ended
seeing
up,
that guy
they
in
tried,
other episodes.
They tried to be. They tried to be inclusive, and they ended up. Being like unnecessarily mysterious,
but it's kind of like in the original series where you in some episodes you see like all these like these extra guys and like you'll see a few of them and excuse me in a couple of episodes and like in other episodes you'll see different people. It's like they just sort of changed up the
but none of them had characters. A bizarre little curly mustache.
That's true.
And yes. It's Mr. Kyle.
Yes. And what's hilarious is in the context of the show we were just talking about how one of the the great advantages of the animated series was that they were able to let their imaginations go completely wild in terms of the design and the
oh,
space.
Oh, yeah, the
and
visuals
the
are
story.
Wild.
And they have a pre-E.T. alien. They have a cat lady alien. They have a fucking bird lieutenant, like an who's just some crazy-ass bird
they
dude.
Had, that was one question about the yesteryear episode. Yeah. I was like, why is there some bird man there?
So they have all that, and then they...
What's a bird man?
And then in that quest for diversity, they just have some, like, pasty ass white guy, white British guy, and not just British. He's upper echelon World War II.
His name is Kyle.
Yeah, he's
that's
he's,
what he is. World War II kind
he's
of guy.
A sar- he's like a, he's like a sergeant.
That's what it
in
is.
World War II.
Sergeant major.
Yeah, and named Montgomery Kyle.
Montgomery,
you
Kyle.
Know, or Beaufort.
Yeah,
Clifton, like, Beaufort
he's,
Kyle
he's
III.
Scotty, he's Scotty's rival, even though Scotty outranks him far, way outranks him. But
Scotty
like,
was. I've
they're
said
both
this,
named Montgomery, but Scotty is supposed to be Scottish, even though he's Canadian.
I said this a second ago, but like Scotty's like really buff, and like you wouldn't want to fuck with that guy. He was always kind of like, you know, not sizable, but a solid dude in the show. But he wasn't that like.
No, he was roundish. He wasn't fat, but he was.
He was fat later on.
Yeah, later, and that kind of suited him. But it in the show he was, you know, you could tell he liked to throw back a few brews.
But he also looked solid, like
he could get in a fight, yeah, but not in a strength fight, in a drunk
fight,
drunken fight,
strength fight,
defending the Enterprise against the Klingons, like literally the reputation. If they call the Enterprise a garbage cow, Scotty's gonna knock you down.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally, that would be a situation he'd do that. He'd be like, what'd you say? And he put his beer down. Everyone else would be like, no, we got to talk as normally. We don't want to get in trouble. We'll get court-martialed or whatever. No, he wouldn't give a fuck. He'd just punch him.
Did you ever see that, like, Futurama, and they did some kind of, like, Star Trek spoof, and they, instead of Scotty, they had, like, Welshy?
I think I did see that.
I forget what the rest of the happened.
So
that pre-ET guy had three arms. That's who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Mr. Eric.
One of them was a penis.
One of them came out of his chest.
Three fucking legs.
One of them was a Federation regulation size alien penis.
Man.
Yeah. I mean, for
everything in the future.
Okay. So what about the plot to this episode, the first episode?
The animated series does not have a cold open.
Yes, no.
It's the only one. It just starts with the opening.
It's like Encounter at Farpoint.
Yeah,
it just kind of starts.
And then the music is different.
Mm-hmm. But it's
almost the same.
It's
music.
It's still an ensemble.
But you know how like the intervals are inverted. How like the music ascends.
Yeah.
Like in the animated series, it goes boo boo.
Yeah.
Boo doo ba.
Yeah, that's right.
And then they have an extra. Like it was always had a bit of a jazzy
it's
backbeat, but they jazzed it up even more.
It's much more 70s, and it's much
when
more sort
show?
Of like showbiz.
73.
73. Right.
Showbiz television kind of like feel. It's more
it's
like
Star
it's more
Trek
brash
in
and
color.
Hollywood kind of. Pa,
I like. Noted one thing. So Star Trek, Star Trek has gone up and down in terms of its use of music, not just in the opening and the actual, you know, music that plays throughout the show. TOS was generally considered very good. TNG often very good. Deep Space Nine was pretty good. They made an effort to use a lot of music there.
It was like a different vibe, but it was still good.
But Voyager was not quite as good with the music. Enterprise, which I've been watching lately, which I've been loving, it's been years since I last watched through it.
Lame theme music.
The theme music was so great, and they do some good stuff on Enterprise, and there's some like TOS touches that they're pretty good at, like little hints of it, but they just don't use a lot. They don't use a lot, and what they do use is very subtle. What I really liked about the animated series, it was just fucking constant music blaring.
They repeat a lot of the things, but it's they have these cool little bits,
and a lot of it is just constantly like in the background. Like,
yeah, yeah, definitely. It's and it, but it's good. It sounds cool.
Well, a lot of the first episode was sort of dedicated. I mean, I guess it was a strange mystery because here most of the episode. The part of the episode that was the most exciting happened in about like a couple penis bulk. The penis bulk of the episode happened in about a couple minutes near the end, when all the intriguing, really intriguing, like it all came tumbling down in a couple minutes. Most of the episode was dedicated to just being like, what's this weird looking thing? What's that looking thing? What's this? What's going on? Like a mystery, but also you get to look at all these cool, back again to the idea of like, well, we can just make whatever the fuck we want. And it doesn't matter if it looks corny or not, because there's no such thing, because it's a cartoon. So, cartoon. It's a cartoon. Cartoon. Sorry.
I don't like how I said that.
He's just gotta draw it. He's being self-conscious.
You draw it and you get Leonard Nimoy to come in and talk.
Yeah. Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah.
William Shatner.
So, but I mean, it was cool because it was like this sort of mystery kind of thing of like, oh, what's all this cool shit around you? Which was negative star mass. That was interesting. He was talking about some negative star mass.
There were a couple things in there.
Yeah, they were talking some for you know, kids. They showed kids. I feel like it's a kid show, baby. But it shows kids respect, you know, which is annoying when they don't talk down, you know, they don't talk down to like their audience. So
it made a big impression on me as a kid. Like they showed that on, they would. So I guess it was probably like sort of 84, 85. They showed that on Nickelodeon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember growing up, I would watch. This is my first introduction to Star Trek. Actually.
The same here.
When he was talking about, Spock was talking about, he was talking about probability of 0.997. When they start talking about probabilities of like, well, there's a probability that we won't survive this thing, or probability that there's low probability that anyone's living on this ship. How does Spock come up with this number?
He's doing statistics, man.
Statistics on what, though?
Spock is like super.
He's using the data and coming up with
statistics.
He's
like super Spock.
He's doing a multivariate regression.
He's super Spock in the animated series. He's like extra, like sort of like flat.
He can do it in his head.
I just don't know what kind of numbers you pick to figure out that, come to that conclusion. You know, like how do you find a probability of how many people are dead? You take every situation in which you found a ship that was this temperature.
What you have to do is
like
is
out in this portion of space, and then you have to send you how many, based upon how many times that happens, they gather how many people lived, and they,
you're a human,
you have to get a probability sample for the sampling population,
right?
The probability sample for the sample population.
Didn't you just, you posted like a graphic recently with some sort of like sampling equation.
Yeah, it's tricky and obnoxious. Now, that doesn't fully answer the question. The fact that that statistic could be arrived at is theoretically possible. The real question, which I think is what you're asking, is if you have the data, you can totally make that probability. It's how does he, what data is he using
to fill in the question.
Model that's resulting in that, considering it's a new thing they've experienced.
Right. So you would imagine there's some sort of art to it, or I guess subjectivity is maybe a better word, but you could also say there's an art to figuring out, to making that the data you're gathering actually apply to something that's meaningful. You come up with a number that you're determining based upon these factors you gather, and you can put these factors together and use the math and they come out to whatever equation you apply, but what's going to say that your equation you're applying is not totally biased and full of shit?
Yeah, but that's true of any probability equation. You have to work. You have to demonstrate that it's not, and that would require the issue in Star Trek is A, in addition to the fact that it's a TV show, and in this case, it's actually a children's TV show.
Yeah, I mean, beyond, I shouldn't give it too much shit.
Beyond that,
because it's pretty awesome, though.
Beyond that, and I don't think it's a problem necessarily, but what they can't show in Star Trek and or any show that's like a real cool, like pro science fiction show, is they can't show you all the heavy lifting that would actually go into something like that, where at the end of all this, Spock would be like publishing a paper where he's laying out exactly the arguments and the sources of the data and comparing it to different scenarios. And, you know, that's not happening because they're obviously facing a green alien ghost.
So what it really is it's basically sort of a way, sort of like an abstract, but sort of like trying to put it in concrete terms. It's supposed to be one more tick on the wall of saying Spock's really fucking good at shit. Like you can say, look what he can do. He comes up with this number. In the future, they come up with probabilities for like how random scenarios will turn out that we've never really come across before. But they can come up with probabilities based upon micro factors that you put together and come up to a whole or something. I don't know.
All it is extending the basic idea. So say the issue of they're flying towards that dead star, right? And they know the gravity of the star, they know the trajectory of the ship, and there are some other factors that will determine, you know, they're trying to escape and not crash into the thing, right? That's a very straightforward, easily, I mean, you have to have computers and stuff, but that is not a complicated thing
right.
to develop the probability for it, because you have the actual things that can happen, the population of things that could happen, which we don't necessarily know all of them, but you there are certain things that could happen, and then you can run a, you know, probability analysis to determine how many of those potential things that could happen are likely to kill the ship, right? Mm-hmm. And then take that number out of 100 or whatever. You know, then you get the probability, right? Like, that's not too complicated. But what they're doing is, and they always do this in Star Trek, is they extend beyond that to just sort of mm-hmm. make the assumption that Spock and or the computer has the ability to, like, pull in all sorts of data that we can't even imagine to create these models instantaneously to then give them an idea. I mean, it's really mainly Spock and Data, honestly. It's not even the computer, right. usually. Yeah, right. Sometimes they ask the computer that
I
shit.
I mean, they look at some screen, like, that, like on the computer.
The computer
but, like,
just has a bunch of information.
Yeah, and then for, they put it together. They crunch the numbers. Yeah. Yeah, because when you're talking about what's the probability this meteor is going to, or this comet, or whatever they call them when they're in space, they're meteors, right? What's or this asteroid, comet, what do they call it when they're afraid it's going to hit Earth?
Those are different
things. It depends what it is, an asteroid, yeah. a comet, or a meteor.
Let's say there's a like, there's a giant Superman. Like,
is it a giant Superman?
There's a giant Superman
in
space.
Is it a comet?
And then we're like thinking, is this giant Superman going to hit Earth? Well, that's predictable based upon a couple factors.
What about Lex Luthor?
One is... You take how many shit flies away in between and see what are the chances that they'll arrive at the same spot. That already takes some subjectivity, but you can probably come up with a pretty solid number. But then the other one would be how accurate is our vision versus the math we do. So what if we just can't tell that well how good it's moving, but you yes. can come up with a margin of error, and that's another yes. way, another factor you put in. That's a little.
And there's always a margin of error.
That's a little less subjective because that's just based upon a lack of resolution.
Sure.
And but then like the idea of like, well, the chances that something's going to hit it on the way to Earth, thus knocking it off its path. I mean, that starts to get a little shady. Now, I'm sure that there's people would say like, oh, well, it's really simple. You just do this. And I know that you break it down enough. It's like you find all the factors in something that's pretty obvious, but it's just interesting. It's hard to figure out how you model that kind of stuff. And then when you're taking a situation like this, it's basically taking factors like this and time, like you just put like a, just like many levels high, what's it called when it's things higher?
Well, welcome to It's Got Statistics.
Yeah. Right. Magnitudes. It's magnitudes.
Magnitudes.
There's a lot more.
Magnitudes, motherfucker.
It's of the first fucking magnitude.
As complicated as it is to figure out what's going to hit it on its way to Earth, you take that and you add tons and tons more of those, and because that's just a small little like grain in that ball of sandball. Okay, I think that's yeah right. So
and regardless, they couldn't account for the green alien ghost monster.
Yeah, right. That's you see. That's another factor. What are the odds of a green?
Ooh, by
alien
the
ghost
way,
monster
again,
pop in?
Again, in the style of the time, the ghost monster. Even though he's described by the ancient alien log as a malevolent creature.
Mm-hmm. And oh, that he was.
Tries, and
right.
Even though he tries to take over the Enterprise. At the end,
oh my
you
God.
End up being all like, oh, this poor fucking alien. Oh, he's like, I'm sorry, don't leave me. And you think, why the fuck couldn't they put like at least a satellite out there that just broadcasts?
He's like alone, you know, like in space.
He could have a pen pal. Maybe he would be less it's likely so to be evil. Because nothing he did was that evil from the context of he's been trapped for 300 million years. Or longer, because he tried to get on that other ship, right? Yeah. So he's been trapped for, say, a billion years.
He just wanted a friend.
In total solitude, and just wants to get out, get away. Now, that doesn't mean you should let him. It's like, you know, a whale eating krill. The krill don't like that.
Well, the line that it cuts to after
but
he
the
says...
the whale ain't doing nothing wrong.
After he says, please, please, so lonely. He's like, so lonely, or whatever.
Yeah.
Then it cuts to... Then it just cuts.
They just fly away.
And then this cuts to them. It's like, okay, back to our mission, star charting.
That's what
he says. It's like, okay, well, we're right back out. We're going to the course right. of that thing because our mission is star charting.
And he says it with like... It's like a little bit exciting. He's like, star charting.
Star charting. And that's directly after
like,
he's like...
It's like, that's not exciting.
They're just
all,
like... Like going so lonely, and that's what makes it even weirder because they just kind of leave you there. They're not like they don't like sit and ponder that for a second. They're just kind of like, back to star charting. That's our job. This is what we see. And it's like, fuck that guy. And you just, yeah, left thinking yeah. about this guy who's he must be so sad.
I know. It was rough. That yeah. was a rough.
But that ending. Made it kind of awesome, this even guy. Though I don't know if they meant to make it that jarring.
I think they, well
like
yes
between
no.
like him saying, between the planet, I can see the planet being like, the planet guy being all like, I'm so lonely. I can see they're trying to make you like think about that. But then to just quickly jump to
they
like,
they had
back
a bad reaction because it was a bad experience because he tried to take over the fucking ship. And yeah. that sort of like medieval disco ball that came down in the center of the fucking bridge. Like, yeah. is that shit always there? Did he just take some? Did he take over some sort of medieval disco ball, or did he form? Into
no,
some
he
because
that was
the,
that was
ball.
The that was a little awkward because you never. I don't think you see that they. I remembered. I have such deep memories of that particular weird disco ball thing from my childhood. But Kirk says to the bridge computer, he says, activate the bridge defense system, and then that yeah, thing comes down.
Right.
So presumably, it's supposed to have lasers. That are supposed to protect you
sort of,
against
all
the aliens
sort of like
attack.
Multi-directional like beams.
It was crazy. It was a crazy concept.
It was blasting the hell out of that guy.
But I thought it was a great, entertaining episode. There are definitely issues in terms of it's a bit schizophrenic in that, as I said, there are certain parts where the animation is really impressive, and then there are other parts where it's ridiculous. Yeah. And there are a number.
It's just filmation.
There's a number of like editing problems, not problems, but you know, sort of weak editing that doesn't quite live up to the story in terms of just some scene transitions. What you're talking about, Dan, is a potential example of that, where they kind of. It's almost like they forgot something
yeah,
in the original
exactly
recording.
Exactly right. Or they had to cut time or something.
I think
I don't know.
Second episode that we're about to get into in Yesteryear, there was even more of that where you could tell they kind of forgot to record a piece of audio, and then you know, they kind of slip something in to that you can tell really wasn't meant to be there, that sort of thing. But other than that, I thought really it's entertaining. It's a Star Trek show.
So how did they get rid of the way they got rid of the alien is they basically played chicken with a star, right? They
yeah,
just like tried
yeah.
to, we're gonna, they
yeah,
were
he thought
to
they were
going to
crash into it.
And that's how they got rid of the alien. That's, yeah. I mean, that's, I guess that's reasonable enough, but I don't know. You think that alien would have seen, been like, you guys aren't going to do that.
But it was just
know.
Lonely. It was lonely. It didn't want to die.
Yeah, you're right.
It really wanted to be that ship.
And what was it? So, yeah, he wanted to be the ship. And what is he? He zapped Kirk, and Kirk had to do the manual override, and he was being zapped the whole time. That sucks.
Yeah.
So he wanted to be the ship. So what was he? Was he weird?
Scotty got stuck in
warp
that
drive.
Hatch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They had to blast Scotty.
And they had to cut him out, and that kind of sexy-looking square-jawed dude just like sat there for about like fucking 30 seconds zapping on that thing. Yeah. So there was just this long scene of that dude just like... And then it just falls off, and then Scotty just gets out.
Yeah.
Spock was talking about something about mitosis. He was like, it was a mitosis.
Yeah,
that's
when the cell splits.
Yeah, but he's saying like it was something which was made by mitosis, the alien or something.
He was just stating outright, and I think we could argue how the fuck does he know this? Going back to what you were saying, Spock is a poser. He just said, "This captain, this creature." You know,
Spock
multiplies
got to go
by
to the
mitosis.
That's what
cabin.
It was.
We didn't see that.
But, and right,
know that.
Right. And even Kirk is like, I'm aware of that, Mr. Spock. You know, yeah. How is Kirk aware of that? It sounded
you
almost like Kirk was.
That.
Yeah, it sounded like he was just trying to be like, I knew that. You know,
it's like,
Spock,
hey,
I knew that. Fuck
you. Guys
you.
Seen Avengers Endgame? Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah.
What'd you think of the ending? Oh, yeah. You know, it was great. Yeah.
There's some parts you could have done better. They pushed it. Yeah.
Spock got to go to the Science Academy.
Yeah.
And not that other chick.
Hmm? You're talking about
some other stuff.
You're talking about that other show.
Yeah, it's a different show.
Monstro. Oh, I'm chewing. Yeah, sorry. All right. Yeah. You know.
All right. So let's now talk about what I really like that episode. I think it's a good introduction.
Yeah.
But let's talk about Yesteryear.
Obey me.
Yesteryear was nominated for a daytime Emmy.
Yesteryear is the one I remember the most
by DC
and,
Fontana
and from a kid and that. Probably had an actual profound effect on my philosophy and attitude moving forward in different ways.
So the parts of you that make you Patrick, where I'm like, that's such a Patrick thing to do. That's what I do all the time. I'm like, that's such a Patrick
he
thing
does,
to do.
Dan's waving his fist in the air.
Not that I do that, but if I were to do that, part of it would be because of...
With the fisting?
With the that guy who spreads his butt cheeks and they
Goatsy?
Made it a goatsy, yeah.
Yeah. So...
Yeah, that's what I ask.
Goat.se.
Oh.
That, so the I think the key things in the episode, obviously, are...
This is a heavy episode.
It is a heavy episode because it's all about, like, dads not being proud of you.
Yeah, right. And having to deal with loss and, like...
And a guy who pretends to be your uncle coming and helping you out, you know?
Really touches your penis instead.
There's all sorts of weird...
Okay, he was totally able to fool Sarek. He was just
And there was Sarek!
Yeah, I'm a distant unknown cousin. I'm a descendant from some tickety-bag.
But I remember, the key things I remember are...
I'm here to see the ancestral shrine.
Yeah, I'm just walking down the shrine to our gods. But why Vulcans don't believe in so god? Vulcans believing in some crazy-ass gods?
Yeah, what is that?
Vulcans are some weird shit. Because they're always praying and doing some weird, like, non-logical shit.
They have, like, priests.
Because they're a bunch of posers. Yeah. Anyway, the theme of, you know, there's the whole dad thing. That wasn't so much what I paid attention to as a kid. What really struck me as a kid was the whole, like, being stoic, like being able to go out in the wild, be stoic in the face of, like, your pet dying and stuff. Mm-hmm. That seemed like really important.
That was sad, man. That sucked when his pet died.
But the
it
other
sucks
thing,
how animals get. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that the other thing that I remember as a child disagreeing with the concept of Spock having to pick being Vulcan or human and finding that wrong and uncomfortable. And I'm not sure what the episode is trying to say, where it lands on that. I think it's not trying to say either. I think it's just trying to explain. It's just backstory. It's saying this is how Spock ended up where he was. His father basically gave him an ultimatum, declared that you must pick. At some point, you will have to pick. You can't be both. You're going to be one or the other.
Now,
I was very uncomfortable with that as a kid.
But it happens differently this time.
Well, so,
in some degree, so it's like Spock is still sort of like changing as a character, but like like his pet dies and he has like sort of this you see this different sort of connection that he has with his dad or like you see like with his younger self and like the older Spock is telling the younger Spock like how to be and like how to impress his dad or something like you see it's like.
Well, Sarek has always been that kind of figure throughout all the series, different series, right? And that's the thing. Was it the show saying you should pick, or was it like Sarek? Was it? Would you think they would have? Are they just trying to drive home the point that Sarek's kind of a prick? And
I think if I had
he's a prick.
But he's a respectable prick.
He is.
Yeah.
He's not a piece of shit.
He's just kind of a prick.
He's just
like he just, you know, it's just he's just sort of like this father figure that doesn't know how to be a father.
I think the key line in the episode to answer our question, because I think the answer's in there. And I think the key line, and I think this is the line that probably got it that nod for the daytime Emmy or contributed to it, is Spock goes through this ordeal. Both Spocks, young Spock, you know, older Spock, the dealings with Sarek. Sarek says you got to pick one or the other. Young Spock picks. He picks Vulcan, and he decides that. And older Spock is living that life. But at the very end of the episode, when you know, talks about the pet dying, and I was like, well, why is that such a big deal? That shouldn't be such a big deal. You know, he says something along the lines of like, well, it is to some or something.
Right.
Yeah.
The implication is that he's upset. He's upset that in the original timeline, the pet didn't die, but in this timeline, he did.
Yeah.
And he's admitting openly, I mean, even though it's subtle, he's admitting that he cared. And that means he isn't full Vulcan. He hasn't decided to follow the Vulcan philosophy 100%. He has allowed some of his human side.
And there's at the end, like, he says something, and then like McCoy's like, "Is that a joke?" Because like Vulcans don't tell jokes, and he's like, "Times change, Doctor."
Oh yeah,
times change.
And that made it. That's kind of funny because
things change.
That made it seem like the whole episode was just like a setup for that punchline. It was like one of those long stories with the lame punchline.
Spock's gonna get McCoy in this episode.
The hilarious part about that thing is from McCoy's perspective. There was no way there could be. There's no joke there. There's no joke for him to get. He's just saying, like, you could have been talking to an Andorian.
He's like, you've gone
fucking nuts, dude.
He wasn't in the episode. Like, he was like the guy that, like, where like the time situation kept changing, like, for him. So, like,
He's all like, I got to recalibrate the machines.
That's right. It was one of those things, right, where everything, it's like, well, one thing, like somebody died, but somehow everything is the same, except people just don't know this person. Of course, that's always like the silly thing with.
We didn't expect you to come back with a Vulcan.
Yeah, right. It's like, hey,
listen,
there's an Andorian now.
You better treat my first officer with respect.
So. Yeah.
And then the first officer shows up and there's that Andorian guy. And like that.
He's all talking like this. I'm an Andorian.
And they're like consulting the computer about, and then it's like Spock dies at age 7. And like, you see the Andorian guy and his like eyes are all like shifting back and forth.
Yeah, yeah, right. But then he comes around and is heroic because he's like, you know, he's like, they're warriors and they value family. That's the deal with Andorians, apparently.
That was
and
so weird.
And so he's like, so even though I'm like not cool with this, but we're warriors and we value family. So yeah, I'll let you do some shit that makes me cease to like
change
have
history,
this job
maybe,
that
maybe
I like.
I won't like exist.
Yeah, right. He's like, oh, let's do it. Spock's just like, you're very nice. Thank you.
Thank you for allowing me to potentially disrupt the entire history of the Federation.
Spock says Andorians are not known for their charity.
So do they have?
Kinda,
a, they
that's
don't have
racist.
A lot of Andorians.
It's kind
really
of a racist thing.
The Vulcans are traditionally racist.
Racist, yeah. You have a lot of what, Jesse?
There's not a lot of it. This is you see the most Andorians in the animated series.
Well, you see a lot of them.
Enterprise.
And sort of like here, okay.
Enterprise,
right.
They kind of love them there.
Yeah,
but yeah,
there's a lot of Andorian action.
But yeah,
Enterprise.
Until Enterprise.
I should check that
out. Yeah, I think Enterprise is a fun watch. So yeah, you were saying about back to the Spock. You were saying
back to the Spock.
Oh yeah, so how back to the Spock? Back to the Spock. That was from Samurai Jack show.
Aichaya.
What's Aichaya?
That's his pet, Aichaya.
Oh yeah, that's right.
That big.
It's like that He-Man.
That
pet.
Big.
Yeah.
Thing
so Aichaya. Oh wait, I was going to talk about the Spock thing real quick. You were saying about Spock not admitting Spock being like, I'm not a full Vulcan or whatever. And it was interesting. I was just going to add, it's probably the moment's probably gone now, but like I was just going to add that when he was telling like his little self about Aichaya dying,
his little self,
his little buddy, it sounds like his penis. But when he's telling his little self about Aichaya dying, he was saying, "You don't cry because it's lived its life." It's another good line too. It's something about you lived its life and things die, and you're happy because things die. And
he's
all that
like,
stuff.
"You only mourn if the life was wasted."
Right. And so he's like, "Don't cry, motherfucker." And so that makes him. That seems wise, but it makes him come off as kind of cold. And this was another moment that also got to show, like, yeah, he isn't. You know, it's sort of like emphasized. It was kind of a little bit of a callback to that part too, when he finally said, "Yeah, it sucks that Aichaya's dead." You know, when he looked around all sneakily, but yeah, Aichaya, who looked like Cringer from He-Man. Interestingly, that what was that fucking dragon beast he fought? A Lampancha or something? Or?
Yeah, I don't think it was Lampancha, but it was a. I think, can't remember.
So Aichaya was
Laguna Beach.
This is the best line.
It was a Laguna Beach.
This is the best line. Lil Spock says, "My Saylot fought a Lamacha in the Langon foothills." It's an awesome line. My Saylot.
Oh, by the way, they would have never been able to do on the original series, certainly, and they probably not even on TNG do a Vulcan planet episode with that kind of. Landscape.
Yeah, the landscape was
crazy ass mountains.
It was awesome.
Desert shit.
That was awesome. Yeah. So Aichaya fought that weird dragon beast, and the thing is Aichaya looked like Cringer. Aichaya was like a bear lion or something. Aichaya like looked like Cringer, but the dragon beast had the colors of Cringer.
Yeah,
it was like green and yellow. So it was weird.
I didn't realize that. You're right.
It's fucking weird.
La Macha.
The man of La Macha.
Aichaya was a Saylot.
Dream the impossible dream.
Unnamed was a La Macha.
Kazwan?
Who's Kazwan?
That was what he was going to take the Kazwan trial.
The Kazwan
trial.
That's his maturity
trial.
Test. Yeah. That's what he ran away to kind of like pre-prove. It's an interesting thing because they didn't, obviously these stories, they can't dwell on stuff. So the pace is usually pretty good. It clips along. They're limited in time. But it was sort of an odd setup where it was like, okay, he's got to go do this trial. He's nervous that he can't do it. So he just goes and does it, you know, beforehand. Like, I guess it was meant to be a practice run, but again, it was kind of, I guess, as the logic of a child, you could argue, like, did he think he was, like, just going to come back by morning or something? It just wasn't clear exactly what his goal was. It was just, basically, he was running away from home.
Yeah.
so it's not like it's a big deal or anything, but it was a little unclear exactly what his motivation was beyond like, oh, I want to try this before I try it.
I wasn't. That's the thing, is I just kind of took it for granted. I remember watching and being like, was it, I guess they're just going on this. Yeah. I didn't really know what the sort of context of, other than this was supposed to be what they do. Like, did they actually, I don't know. Yeah. That was very confusing. The, like, if that was actually happening or not, what was really going on there?
I did really like that the bookend, I mean the structure, I mean the hanger, I mean the clothesline, the clothing line, the drying rack upon which this plot was centered, was to revisit the Guardian of Time, and that they're using it, that they're using it for, it's a very Star Trek thing to do, to be like, okay, we discovered this crazy, you know, holographic TV thing.
Yeah, right. We're perfectly fine with like time traveling. Yeah, like, so
we're gonna like send historians here to like use it.
I mean, I know this is like one of the questions you're not supposed to really ask because it's pointless, but it is kind of funny. They just have this time portal that just chills on this planet that's just basically unmanned, and they just kind of like.
My understanding. I think I heard this on an episode of on Trek FM, on one of their shows, which, by the way, if anybody out there, any of our audience wants to hear some actual quality Star Trek analysis, go to the Trek FM website and subscribe to one of their many high quality podcasts on every Star Trek topic, much better than anything you'll hear here. The only main difference is they don't curse. There's not as much mention of goatsy or diarrhea.
Penis in my penis.
Or penises being placed inside of other penises. That's the main value add that you get with It's Got Star Trek. But anyway, on one of their episodes, I think they were talking about unproduced episodes of The Next Generation. And if I recall correctly, I think it was The Next Generation where there was actually an idea to use the Guardian of Time, you know, to bring that back to do an episode with it, but they never ended up doing it. And I was thinking, I would not be surprised if they don't bring that back for Discovery. Or maybe not Discovery, maybe Picard, probably not Picard, but I think that is something that it's problematic in some ways because it's this crazy thing, but you know, so was Q, so was a bunch of other things. And it's an interesting thing that we haven't seen since this episode, since, as far as I know, right? I don't think we've seen the Guardian of Time in any other iteration of Star Trek. They've done a ton of time travel, but they haven't used the fucking Guardian of Time.
So how much of the stuff in Star Trek animated series do they really like, how, I mean, I guess it's supposed to be all canon and everything like that, right? I mean, but do they really ever reference anything from Star Trek animated series?
Oh, there's a bunch of stuff.
Do they?
Because like Mud turns up again. There's another like Tribble episode. There's an episode where they go to like the planet, like the Alice in Wonderland drinks. Like,
yeah, that's right. They do go back to that. So I mean, but Dan was asking if they ever reference stuff in the animated series. And what I can say is in Discovery, they do reference, it's in Discovery right at the beginning, you know, in the Context is King, you know, Context is for Kings episode, the third episode of Discovery. Mm-hmm. They introduce Michael Burnham's interest in Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And that Amanda Grayson was the one who introduced her and Spock to it. And that is a callback to, it's not one of the episodes we saw, but there's a later episode where you see Amanda Grayson introducing Spock to Alice in Wonderland. Like you understand that, well, I forget exactly what you see, but you get that they both are into Alice in Wonderland. So it's like one of those kind of light, very, very esoteric Easter eggs that they introduce into Discovery, but then they start using it for kind of plot and character development in Discovery.
I was noticing that Spock's mom, she like stands like a sexy drawing would stand when she was standing there. It was like, that's how you would draw a sexy drawing of someone standing. Yeah. She's supposed to be pretty old at this point, right? I don't know.
Probably not. Not if Spock is like a.
Yeah.
And I keep calling him the Guardian of Time when it's the Guardian of Forever.
Guardian of Forever.
I'm a fucking asshole.
You fucked it up.
That's why you should be listening to Trek FM.
So you don't have to be angry for like 5 minutes until the fucking people realize what they're talking about.
Sarek is pretty old. Sarek is like always, you know.
Yeah, he died at 200 or something.
On the episode of DS.
Because like, he goes all the way to TNG. He was born in like the 2150s or something. I looked that up. I'm sorry.
Who was Spock? Was born in 21?
No, Sarek.
That's 100 years and 30 after today.
Who dat?
Who dat? Who dat? Who dat? On the episode of DS9, there was a line I fucked up involving when O'Brien talks about, like, you know, Kira being a real hot tamale. You know, he's yeah. Like, it's like, what is this? Have you ever served under
a Bajoran with a Bajoran officer?
Officer woman. Bajoran woman.
Yes,
woman specifically.
Woman. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I said,
right, not a Bajoran man.
Well, and what I said is, have you ever met a Bajoran woman? When it was really, have you ever served?
We should have an errata section at the end of each episode.
Erotic?
An erotic section. Well, we can have both. We can have a category for the erotic, yeah,
just like,
and then a category improv, for the errata.
Improv, like a bunch of like male friends having sex for the first time, like every single week. Just improv that scene over the podcast.
I would actually reverse it. I would say that the erotic section should be highly scripted, but the errata section should be completely off the cuff and improvised.
What is errata?
Errata.
That's like, know, that stuff that people like in the drink they drink. You know, with the that's thick, made out of oatmeal.
No, that's horchata.
Oh,
horchata.
Okay. You mean horchata?
Yeah.
No, errata is when you know, like if you publish a science story, uh-huh, and then you find out there's a mistake, and then they'll add a little thing at the end. They'll say errata.
So how do we improvise that? We just talk shit.
Talk about what we got wrong.
So we just talk shit. We just like go to the table assuming there's something wrong before we actually find
we'll
it.
We'll have to listen to them.
No, but when original. we just have to start calling each other. It's like, dude, Jesse, last week when we were talking about Star Trek, what were we talking about?
You said this.
Really?
You said this? But you really should have said
you,
this.
You said that Captain Michael Burnham was like
captain. She's not a captain.
Was
there's
a captain,
an errata right there. You
was a captain,
shit.
But really she wasn't a captain.
I didn't say
you
that.
Said that,
see,
and that was fucked up.
That's a bad example.
Dan is creating a scenario, placing Jesse in the character of the scenario of the fool.
Fool.
I haven't yet begun to play the fool.
Oh shit. We don't even know.
Errata.
Errata.
Although I do like the erotica.
Errata.
There's a lot of Star Trek erotica out there. You know what I haven't done? I have not looked up. I usually make a practice of looking up on Rule 34, which is, you know, the if something exists, there is porn of it. It's that law of the internet, and it's largely true. Disappointingly, disappointingly not as true as we'd like. We can all say. By the way, that's a reference to the fact that there is insufficient Rule 34 erotica for Howl's Moving Castle in terms of Howl. There's lots of erotica involving the female character and the fire character, you know, the fire demon, but Howl himself, you guys are looking at me with blank faces, so we'll leave it to the audience. We'll figure it out. Rule 34, Howl, if you're good at drawing anime, this is not primarily for me, but for my wife. She's a big fan of Howl, the character of Howl. Not enough nude Howl out there in various erotic situations. So that's just a call out to the artists. Our artists out there. It has nothing to do with Star Trek.
I don't really do the Rule 34 stuff. I usually stick to the Trashy Boners subreddit.
That shit is ridiculous. Yeah, that shit is hilarious and ridiculous. It's sometimes it's erotic. Other times it's just more anthropological.
Yeah, right. It's pretty awesome. A lot of people just peeing in places too, which is interesting.
All right, so what I was saying is there's not a lot of I apologize, I got distracted by this request for nude pictures of Howl from Howl's Moving Castle.
Wait, okay.
I'm explaining that was an error, that was an errata on my part.
Obey me.
I meant
Well, obey
exactly.
Me.
What I'm trying to
obey
say is there's not enough rule. I haven't checked if there's enough about the Rule 34 about animated Star Trek. There's tons on just straight up Star Trek.
Animated.
There's a bunch of gross, horrible stuff out there and some good stuff. But I haven't checked the anime Rule 34. I mean, the animated Rule 34 because, I mean, that green alien ghost could do some great bondage type stuff with it. Obey me. Obey me. And then, you know, that healer, that Vulcan healer guy, that he's got quite a beard.
He was calling Spock out for being like a prankster or something. Yeah. What was that about?
You did a human thing called practical joke.
Right.
What are all the aliens talking about?
I probably won't. You know, I feel like there's only one kid that plays the voice of like you know,
all the kids.
All the kids.
Arthur!
He's always yelling all the time. Gee, I don't know. He's always like yelling. Arthur. Yeah, is that a really a very, like, you know, Vulcan thing to do? Is be throwing, like,
it is actually. They're racist. Vulcans are traditionally racist all through and through.
But don't they? Aren't they a little bit like more clever about it in the sense that they're just like, oh, we didn't tell you because we wanted the job to be done correctly. Where they're just like, Arthur, like that's just like that's kind of weak for a Vulcan.
I don't disagree, but I think it's in character because I think that, again, the key with the Vulcans is they portray themselves as being these adenine, logical, brilliant, you know, zippity zap zaps. When in reality, It's not that it's untrue, but that it's a facade. And being a facade doesn't make it bad. Spock basically says it in this episode. He's like, we have emotions, but we control them. We choose to.
No, Spock straight up. Spock, that is like the one time where, one of the few times, if that he directly says that. There's he other times where it's implied like, oh, well, that... Well, not implied. I guess they were saying, like, back in the day, we used to have wars because then we had to learn to control our emotions because I guess apparently Vulcans have supercharged emotions.
Yeah, boy, you don't want to see some of these old school Vulcans, guy.
No, you don't. And then
you want to see that?
You better watch it.
And then when they go to a bar and see one of these guys out there with their pony ears and their beer in their hand.
Ponfar, right?
Ponfar all up in this shit.
And they get really horny and violent and shit.
Ponfar right up.
Slip around on the floor. There's Ponfar all over the kitchen floor. It's ridiculous.
So
you got to mop that shit up. You got to mop out that pond fire.
You want a new school Vulcan. You know what to expect. They might be assholes, but they're predictable assholes.
So when this so he's
apparently
fighting
the Vulcan kids don't wear too many clothes.
That's nothing. What was up with that? That was weird and creepy too. Like, I don't know why they're wearing some spandex with some kind of sash or something or strap
some kind
or whatever.
Of action sash.
It was like an action figure sash.
But I think that those kids acting that way makes sense because it is a facade. They are kids, and what they're being taught a lot when you see all of Star Trek and everything related to Vulcans, and again, Enterprise is a great source for this because they have a lot of Vulcan culture stuff is an Enterprise. But when you all start to pull it apart, a key tenet of their philosophy, it's not logic, it's xenophobia and isolationism. And the logic almost helps overcome that a little bit because right at the beginning, from First Contact through Enterprise, the Vulcans are happy to like string you along and kind of use you a little bit, but they don't have any respect for anybody else. It takes years before they get to the point where they actually, you know, are integrated with the other cultures on a more equal footing. And even then they're pieces of shit. Like that episode of Deep Space Nine with that guy challenging Sisko to the baseball game. And he was just a complete cocksucker the entire fucking time.
Yeah. Spock, he says at that scene where he says he has emotions, but then he's straight up says, but we learn to control them. By the way, therapist would tell you that you're not supposed to control your emotions. You're supposed to manage your emotions.
Yeah.
Because like controlling your emotions, that's like saying a wave
is
coming.
That's how you get the problem.
If like a wave is coming, you can't control the wave and make it go in a direction. But what you do is you manage the situation. You ride with the wave instead of trying to fight it. In fact, trying to control it and fight it makes shit worse sometimes.
Right. That's why you're going to
so
therapy.
I would say, and I think that. So I would say that was not like a Vulcan thing. That was just a writer's thing. And that's just what they said. And
no,
I'm not saying it's right or wrong,
I disagree with you using your own argument. I disagree with that segment.
Judo.
Yeah, it is fucking judo. Because
the
point has always been that the facade Vulcans put forward is not what you should want to do.
You shouldn't control them.
You should not do what Vulcans do because it doesn't actually work because the Vulcans have logic terrorists. The Vulcans, half of Enterprise is T'Pol saying that this is what we should do. This is the Vulcan idea of what to do. And it always ends up being wrong or at least, you know, problematic, right? She's like, well, we don't need to investigate that comet. We don't need to go to that
planet.
Yeah,
that's all bullshit.
We don't need to do that shit.
Yeah, that was what pissed me off a lot about like T'Pol is being like, we don't need to, Vulcans don't have interest in these kinds of boring things. Yeah. They don't have anything to offer us because we don't care if they're interesting. They're just useless. Blah, blah, blah.
We have better toys.
We are meant to, in my opinion, we are not meant to and never were. I could be wrong. Maybe one writer here or there, but the intention of Vulcans, just like with Klingons and Ferengi and Cardassians and Romulans and Andorians and the Borg, and I'm just going to, Bolians.
Whatever the fuck Neelix is.
Oh, fuck that guy. No, he was a fucking From a literary perspective, the aliens in Star Trek are supposed to represent versions of humanity, separated from humanity and isolated, so that we can analyze, and the writers and the stories can convey why being that alone, separating that aspect of your humanity out, is problematic. The Ferengi are too greedy. The Klingons are too violent. The Romulans are too sneaky. The Cardassians are too, you know, all about order. The Vulcans are all, you know, logic, logic, logic. Those individually are not problematic. I mean, combined in a human together are not problematic as aspects of a human, as facets of a personality. But in isolation and focused on, they're all problematic.
It's interesting because... one thing that I derived from what you said,
very interesting.
Yes, I know. That's why I said it, because everyone thinks that's really fun to talk about when you're supposed to be talking about something else, but instead you get sidetracked with the way you presented that. So like Ferengi, right? They're greedy. That was more just like... sort of like an indulgence, giving into their greed, right? And Klingons, like, I wouldn't, it's not so much, you could call it an indulgence, but they're just engaging in what comes naturally to. That's what I should say. The assumption is they are, with Vulcans and Ferengi, they're both sort of going with what comes naturally to them, I should say. But Vulcans, it's like the opposite, because what comes naturally to them, apparently, is to be raging psychopaths, emotional psychopaths, and so they're rejecting that, and now, but they're doing the thing where it's like, oh, well, I'm quitting using drugs, so I'm going all in on the gym, or some shit like that. It's kind of like, and then they become like weird looking.
Suggest, I don't think that, I think you're right about the Vulcans. I would say that's actually true of all the other races as well, the other alien species, because
it's a lot of survivals.
Well, because in most of those species, we see examples of people who do not match that stereotype of that species. So it's saying it's what comes naturally to them. For me, it's problematic language, because I do think it's fault of, it's their culture. I think they're raised in that culture, and they're punished.
I mean,
if they don't,
I was being general.
I know. I understand.
I know it is dangerous to start categorizing.
I'm being super semantic. I'm just being obnoxiously semantic. But I'm just, to me, when I think about, you know, you think about Rom or Nog, who don't quite fit. Even Quark, he wants to fit this Ferengi stereotype, but he kind of can't help himself sometimes, because he's had other influences. He's had other influences in his life that have adjusted his philosophy. Same thing with Worf, you know? And Garak and, you know, Damar, you know, there's been a couple Romulans that maybe this counts as well, but even, you know, the idea is that all those different cultures, and Vulcans are one of the chief ones, you know, represent a piece of humanity that is taken out of the human component and set by itself as an illustration of the problem. Now, obviously, when they introduce these characters and then they go on and there's character development, they go on to be much broader than fulfilling just that role. But I think in an archetypal sense, that's what the alien races represent. They're not actual alien races, right? And that's why I sometimes get frustrated from people who are like, I'm going to be just like the Klingons and have honor. It's like, no, that's a problem to have a fucking culture surrounded by nothing but honor, especially when honor is a subjective thing.
People try to reconcile that with humans somehow by, like, for example, in fantasy games, like, you know, elf gets +1, you know, agility, a dwarf gets +1 constitution or whatever. Human is just the best. Elf shot the fucking food. Fucker mother. But the humans are always like some kind of all around character. The great thing about humans is they're so versatile, and they can do this and they can do that. They can't do anything that well, but they can do this, that, and that, the other. But then, like, in a lot of like I feel like in certain Star Trek ones, I can't remember which ones, or maybe it's just a sci-fi trope in general, where it's not uncommon to have something to the effect of the alien coming being like, the thing about you humans, I never understood why anyone thought humans were any good, because they suck at everything. But then I understood their curiosity, their willingness to learn. And it's like shit like that is what they always try to stress. And that, I think, is just sort of like reconciling with the fact that, like, you have all these species that have, like you were just saying, for point of a point of telling a story and conveying philosophies and creating discussions and stuff like that. It's like, you know, you got the logic race and the this race and the that race. And you, like you said, it's not about the race. It's more about just these discussions upon what it takes to be human.
Yeah,
but they're serving
a purpose. That's what a character does.
Right, right. And so I think they sometimes try to sort of like come up with a reason, though, as like, well, what defines humans? If we've already taken these creatures that are sort of an extrapolating one aspect of humanity for each of these creatures, well, how do humans define themselves in this universe you've created? Given that humans have to, it'd be okay if they lived without humans, but if you're introducing humans in this universe that has all these extractions of humans, it's like, how can you say where humans fit among that role? I mean, in the end, every alien's looks just like a human with shit on their head or something, you know? It's never a reduction, it's always an addition, and that's just down to basic sort of like practicality. But
yeah. You want them to start like scooping eyeballs out of the actor.
I was thinking, like, how would you go about doing that? It'd be pretty,
you're gonna get paid $700 a day.
It'd be pretty
we're gonna peel off your we're gonna do some trepanation here and scoop out a piece of your brain.
Right. So
no, it's interesting stuff. I think that when you, this is not a hard and fast rule, obviously, but I think one way, if you want to watch Star Trek, it's true of a lot of things, but let's just keep it to Star Trek for the moment, because it works really well, is in an episode or in a TV show, one of the shows where things aren't quite clicking, you know, you're watching it, you know, earlier, Jesse, you say like, it feels like Star Trek. This animated show feels like Star Trek. But sometimes you watch something and you don't get that little zap, that little extra thing. Happens a lot on Voyager. Mm-hmm. Happens periodically on a little bit sometimes here and there on Enterprise. Discovery occasionally has that. And I think when that happens is when the writers and producers make the mistake, understandable, it's an oversight maybe is better than mistake, of forgetting that alien race is a literary device. And that's what you're supposed to use it for. So if you have a Klingon, if you have an Andorian, they're supposed to be utilized for a literary purpose as opposed to just being a character, just being another character, right? So I think too often they write them like, we're so used to having Klingons around. They're just in our brains. They're in the popular culture that you write a little story with the Klingons and it's just like, oh, it's like writing a story that's got a Frenchman in it. Or something,
right.
Which is fine, except they're not a Frenchman, they're a Klingon, and they kind of like, there's a particular purpose,
the
like
animated,
if you're going to have a Klingon.
Animated series writers were like, a lot of the same writers for the original series.
And they did a better job.
And that's, yeah, and that's like the older guard of people that wrote for TV, and the people that acted on TV, and the people that directed on TV. It was more like film. It was a little more... You know,
and
it was a higher level.
The stories are really well structured.
The people that wrote the stories could write like science fiction short stories. That's essentially what they were writing in the script.
And
they were writing science fiction short stories. You could take these stories. You could change them. You could change the names, and they would just be standalone science fiction stories, mm-hmm. not connected to Star Trek. But you could insert Star Trek names and make them Star Trek stories.
Yesteryear could have been in a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah, exactly.
The way that going back to what you guys were saying about like how it was, I think Jesse, it was you talking about the voiceovers. I think that was you, basically how the voiceovers. It sounds, there's got to be, having never done voiceover anything, it makes me wonder how you approach voiceover versus like speaking your lines as an actor, you know, that's being filmed, you know, because you have to probably deliver your lines differently. It's really interesting in Star Trek how the lines are delivered. And I was thinking about it, these lines, the way they're delivered, it's so creepy. Something about this is kind of gives me the heebie-jeebies. Yeah,
it's real.
DeForest Kelly was sipping on a gin and tonic.
Yeah.
Or mint julep
he's
or something.
He's a little laid back. Kirk is a little more.
Yeah, they all sound laid back. Now, I was wondering, like, I was trying to take it out of the cartoon context and just listen to it. And I was like, well, maybe that's, if this was, like, in front of a camera, it would sound not so surreal.
Yeah.
But I think you might be right, though, is they did take a chilled back, I think, sort of view of it. Because, yeah, in the previous episode when I was mentioning, Kirk mentioned some shit about, like, you know, Sulu, some shit's happening. Look at that shit that's happening. Let me know what kind of shit's going on. and it's all serious, right? But the way he looks, he's just got the... Now, that was like the opposite problem. That was actually the animation, like, looked all laid back and sly. But no, but when they're talking, they sound casual when they're talking. It almost reminded me of, what's that thing that lip sync, bad lip sync... it's not the bad lip sync one, but it's the cartoon Pork Chop Sandwiches. Do you know? You remember that where it's like they show like the G.I. Joe animation?
Chronic lymphocytic lymphoma.
No, it's when they show. You know what I'm talking about on YouTube. You can go and watch. They take old animations from G.I. Joe and shit like that, and they have say funny shit instead, right? And it has that
it's
feel.
Bad lip reading. Is that
I think bad lip reading though is they actually do sports and stuff, but it's the same idea. Anyways, it just. Kind of felt casual like that because just sort of this sort of like this sort of off the cuff conversational kind of tone that had, but it could just be because they are speaking not with the idea of some kind of cartoon in mind. It's almost like they were speaking in some other kind of way.
Yes, yeah.
And so the way it matched up, it's like maybe it would have seemed more normal like if they were acting, but maybe it wouldn't have because maybe, yeah, their delivery might have also just changed because they weren't having to be watched for the roles. But there was
a
very surreal
voice acting.
Voice acting.
It's a different. You're right. It's a different beast. Yeah, it's a different beast.
Yeah, and you have to do different things. I'm sure there's different
techniques. Rob Paulson, who does a podcast.
My name is Robert Paulson. His name is Robert Paulson.
I believe it's Robert Paulson who did, you know, he was the voice. He was on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon. He was Pinky from Pinky and the Brain.
Mm.
He's one of those voice actors that's been in everything. I think he's been on Rick and Morty and everything.
He's been on Rob Paulson. Mom.
He has a great podcast, actually. I don't know if he's still doing it. I forget, but, if you're into voice, anybody out there into voice acting stuff, his podcast is really great because he interviews all the major voice actors from all the cartoons, you know, going all the way back to, the cartoons like the animated Star Trek and stuff, all the way to the future, to the current time, the Batman and everything. He's friends with all these people. He's highly respected. But what's really interesting is he talks about the business of voice acting and the difference and the difference in performance style compared to actual acting. What's good, what's bad, you know, the advantages, disadvantages and all that. But hearing him talk about it, it really takes a lot of work and preparation and thinking. It's not that other acting doesn't, but it's, you know, because you can show up in your jeans and you don't have to wear a costume. But it's harder work than people might think.
Sometimes you're doing a lot of physical stuff to make your voice sound weird.
The guy who did Roger Rabbit voice looked all weird.
Please, Eddie!
But I'm sure that people do more difficult shit than that. That just came to mind for some reason. I think that was the first time I went as a kid, the first time ever that I remember seeing.
Did it give you a boner?
A voice. Jessica Rabbit? I don't think I got boners then.
From Jessica Rabbit?
No, this was the first time I saw like a human, the person behind the voice. Maybe not the first, but one of the first times I remember being like, that's what a cartoon voice looks like in real life. And then watching him do the voice and he was all moving his face around. No, and I was never attracted to Jessica Rabbit. I was much more attracted to the fox on the Robin Hood.
Yeah, the fox on the Robin Hood and the fairy in Fern Gully.
I saw Ferngully once in theaters a long time ago, and I don't remember what she's like.
She's all right.
She's all right.
You know, even better, Princess Mononoke, you know, the wolf girl in the movie, in the titular Princess Mononoke movie, Mononoke Hime.
Princess, please Mononoke don't blow Hime. Me.
she was good. But I was 16 by that time.
But I was 16 when that happened.
When that movie came out.
So
that was a long time ago.
That was many boners that day. That was longer ago than we were living up until that point.
Cleopatra is closer to the moon landing than to the building of the pyramids. Come on, keep naming facts.
Obey me. That's a fact.
All right, so we can probably.
This has been a very good podcast.
Yeah, we can settle. We can settle
I
down.
We really got a lot out of the animated series.
I'm going to keep watching. I really was enjoying it.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, okay.
We're going to talk about favorite stuff, shitty stuff,
so,
perplexing stuff.
This anime, I don't remember. I have to watch.
Butt stuff.
I seem to remember this part from He-Man, but. I'm not sure if I remember the other part. two things about these people.
Two things.
They got no whites on them eyes, hey. And they all have one tooth on each side of their mouth. They've one got tooth. They've got a high tooth and a low tooth, and then they got and they got no tooth. Eye whites. It's like all their eye whites went on down to their mouth into their teeth. Ho, you know, because instead of up there, they took them down there.
No respect. No respect at all.
Conservation, the law of conservation of white things on your face.
There's a lot of white people in this shit.
So, but their teeth, they only got one tooth up top and one below. And you look at their eyes. Did you not notice they only have black parts of their eyes, no whites to their eyes? The whites of their eyes are flesh colored.
I thought my wife was running around on me, so I called her up one day from the office. I called her up at home, and I called her up. She answered the phone. I said, "I think you're cheating on me." And she said, "Who is this?"
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. But you guys don't know what I'm talking about. You got to watch it again.
There's some bit about, like, there's some Rodney Dangerfield bit where he's like, some guy, like, showed me, like, pictures of his kids, and they were like, "Those were my kids." That was the gist of it. There's probably more meat on the bone.
No, I can imagine. I don't even need to know what he actually said, because I'm like, yeah, it's probably really funny.
He changed his name because he ran some scam about, like, he was like selling siding or something. I forget exactly. He ran some like weird scam and had a warrant out for his address, and he like changed his name and like went to Hollywood and became a comedian. Like, he's just like, "I gotta get out of here. I scammed these motherfuckers out of like $10,000.
So I'm gonna take it neither of you remember. You watch it again, neither of you remember that these people don't have eye whites in their eyes.
I totally believe it because it sort of seems to make sense, but my visual memory is looking more at Scotty's bulked out build.
Yeah.
And Spock's pecs.
Pert. Look, I'm just saying,
and he's
look.
Eventually played by Ethan Peck.
Look and notice. Hear me now and believe me later. What's that from? That's from a show.
Yes.
Hear me now and believe me later. I can't remember.
You just said that just now.
Do this now and something, 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 something else later. That's when it got funnier because
something,
it was like.
Something, something,
it
would something, be like, something, something, something else.
It would be like, listen to me that's now like, and fall
Arnold,
on your face and eat some chicken fried steak later.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
No. Oh, that's right. It was fucking that. Poop and Dupe from SNL. Yeah, right.
Okay. Hans and Franz.
Okay, look. Let me. Look.
We had to pump you up.
Oh, my God.
Get your point out. We're finishing up the show.
Yeah, trying. Trying. This is going a lot faster.
Will it?
So just saying, they had flesh for eyeballs. And they had black eyes.
You know, I have a vague.
They got them black eyes.
They got them big black eyes.
Big black eyes.
They got them big black eyes.
Sort of.
That's really inside.
I believe I recall what you're talking about. I do think I remember being perplexed by some of the eyeballs.
Kirk, when he talks near the end of the episode, his lips barely fucking move. They like don't move at all. They like just
he's
don't
smooth.
Move. He's smooth.
He's extra smooth in the animated.
When Achaya died, that was a fucking bummer. You knew he was fucked when Spock said he lived a good life. He's like when they were trying to heal him. They were trying to heal Achaya, and you thought there was hope for Achaya. And when Spock's like, "Well, you know, you can't be sad for him if he dies because he lived a good life." That's when you knew Achaya was dead. Spock is a badass with that Vulcan neck pinch. He put out the Lampada dragon.
Yeah. That's right. He grasps it all. Like,
yeah.
You know what? I bet there's some Rule 34 on that scene. Mm.
Yeah, that would make sense. So those kids were like quarreling. Spock was quarreling with those kids, right?
There was like a fat Vulcan and two skinny Vulcans.
Yeah, it was like watching was What's Happening.
Yeah.
It was like Vulcan version of What's Happening.
And at the end of the episode, when he's about to go play with those kids, he looks up at Sarek and's like, "I learned how to Vulcan neck pinch."
I know.
And Sarek's all proud of him, and then he runs off.
I'm
going to
demonstrate a Vulcan neck pinch.
Yeah, yeah. So is he just like, they were yelling at Spock for getting in quarrels. His human side was fighting with the Vulcans. But then he comes back and talks about how he's going to like practice his Vulcan neck pinch. What he's basically saying is, "I'm going to go fuck those kids up.
I'm going to show those kids a thing or two."
And so, is a Vulcan teen, preteen fight just a bunch of kids rushing at each other, like trying to pinch each other. And then is it that sometimes it happens if a group of kids are doing this, they just accidentally sort of like evolve
touch their
buttholes? No, they end up standing in like a circle, like running around trying to neck pinch each other, and then
playing
they all grab each other at the
same
time. They all go down comically.
Yeah. That's gotta evolve into some kind of like truly sexual thing. That's a story right there. But yeah, so anyways, in that instance, Sarek's proud of him now. Before, Sarek was upset with him for quarreling, but now, because it involves a fucking logical-ass neck pinch, it's okay to go fight with the boys.
Y'all got any of them logical-ass neck pinches? Logical, motherfucker.
Cross the desert.
I have a line that I have a note that just says subjective time. I don't really know.
Yeah, yeah, you get mentioned. I like that because it's true, I guess.
I don't know. I guess that was like, what did I mean by subjective?
Because he was saying the star date and then he kept following it up with subjective time.
Oh, right. Okay. That's what I meant. I couldn't remember why I wrote that. I was like, what did that mean? And that's what it was. Yeah, totally.
They're all
it was
like into this whole, like, you know, there is no time that doesn't make any sense because it depends on your frame of reference.
Einstein, bitches. They are descended from T'Pel, not T'Pol. They're descended from T'Pel. At one point, they say peace and long life instead of live long and prosper.
Well, that's normal.
It's the call and response.
Yeah, call
that's
and response.
The call and response. Okay. Well,
kind of like a Hebrew thing.
Fucking peace. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you kind of suck. It's okay.
8877 Vulcan.
8675. Yeah. 300.
I hear all.
Obey me.
Obey me.
Obey me.
Oh, yeah. And Spock. Oh, yeah. This one really crawled my dad. Was like. When Spock was talking about like how okay, so it's funny they go in. One thing I like about that episode actually, that's
one thing
that
I like.
I can tell you're like,
I'm sorry, no, I'm totally into.
Let
this.
Let me tell you
I'm
about.
Totally
it.
Into it.
No, I'm glad you're giddy. That means you're giddy, and that's a good thing. So I like the structure of the episode because they didn't actually get into the meat and potatoes of the episode.
Potato.
You're talking about crawdads. You're talking about meat and potatoes. I did not have a proper dinner.
Oh shit!
I'm hungry now.
I'm hungry.
That's.
I'm gonna end up eating a donut because of your ass. Crawdads and meat and potatoes.
I'd rather eat a crawdad.
They didn't get into the bulk of this episode until after this like pre-episode thing. There's a lot of setup. Like to this episode of the whole like went back in time, went forward in time, saw all this shit. The actual episode was about Spock on his kid. Wait, Spock with his kid.
with himself.
That's himself.
But like they spent a good like 7-8 minutes, I think, leading up to the actual episode. That's like in The Simpsons, they do that all the time, where like the first 6-7 minutes of The Simpsons is just some kind of lead up. But when Spock was talking about his that's the introduction to the bird creature. Like, what the fuck is this? But then Spock's
just chilling by that gate.
They don't need to explain it because it's the future and they don't care about
that other
like
chick
that.
That's voiced by like Majel Barrett voices various voices on the show and they all sound the same.
Yeah, yeah, it's always funny.
And she's one of those. She's one of the people at the gate. So, I think she just hangs out there. She's one of the historians.
So when Spock is trying to remember as a kid, right? Spock's remembering as a kid. He's like, yeah, I was on my Ponfar or whatever. My
damn right he was.
Whatever. No, the Ponfar is the sex thing. He was on the other thing. And he
Coswan.
Well, remember when he was saying he was remembering at the beginning. At the beginning of the episode, he was talking about how he remembered being on the Coswan. And he said that a person came to save him. He says he forgot his...
Salek.
Yes, Salek, which was Spock. But he said...
Where did he come up with that name? He just pulled that name out of
But no, he... The, what, no, what, no, what he said... was Vulcan-ass motherfucker. What he said was, someone came to save me, but I don't remember his name.
No, and then he said his name was this. That's what didn't make any sense. He said, I don't remember his name. And then 10 seconds later, he said he called himself blah blah blah. So
did he acknowledge? Was he like, oh wait a second, I do remember his name.
No, he didn't say, oh wait a second. He said he called himself. He said, I don't remember his name. He called himself this.
So they should have just gotten rid of the whole. They should have gotten.
That's weird.
They should have gotten rid of the whole forget his name in the first place because that doesn't make sense anyways. Because you're gonna remember. You're gonna remember that person.
Has to remember the person.
They say in traumatizing events, what you don't remember. The shit before or after sometimes, but you're gonna remember like you know the person who saved you, right? Anyway,
yes.
There was another funny Absolutely. Thing that I noticed, or think I noticed. I could be exaggerating in my brain, but I think it's the first time that they beam back up. You know, so they've come out of the Guardian of Forever. No, people don't recognize Spock, and they beam up, and then people continue to not recognize Spock. It's all awkward. I think that's where
there's a shifty
it
Android.
Sounds like they forgot to have Shatner record like a beam us up. Mm. So he said something like beam up or something like beam up. He was like Enterprise beam up. And it sounded like two different clips edited together. So maybe they just found some other time that he said like beam up.
It's all super casual sounding.
And it's all like just squished together and it's very fast. And then they just sort of like they beam up kind of, you know, it seemed like it was one of those weird editing afterthoughts that they didn't quite have it covered.
Well, there was a weird thing they did actually in the previous episode, the Farthest Star, they did that where like Kirk like asks engineering through the ship's computers. He like asks them some question and then like nobody answers and he just kind of like, okay, I guess we'll never find out. I'm trying to, that's what it is. He asked permission from some,
he was asking the alien for permission.
He was asking, I thought he was asking engineering.
No, he was asking the alien if it's okay for his first officer to help. He said, will have to help my engineer.
Right, right. And what was funny is no one answered, and he's just kind of like, I guess it is. Yeah, and it's just like, what? Why would it just be, I guess it is. Like, that seems that they forget to record some, yeah. Anyway, I don't know.
Fuck this guy.
I guess there's only a couple more things.
Yes. Let's hear them all.
Andorians are weird and gray.
Yeah.
And shifty-eyed.
And shifty-eyed.
Shifty antennaed.
The length of these episodes, they're 24 minutes and you can, and they're really good. Right. But you can tell why 40 plus minutes is really like optimal for this kind of stuff because there's so many plot points that they have to hit.
Yeah. I think original series episodes where it was like 54 minutes long.
Right. So there's not a lot of time for things like character development and sort of interpersonal sort of things because this is just storytelling as purists. There's not really much characterization going on, except Spock is really more talking about Vulcans and I guess his own character in a
They only manage it if it's like a whole episode devoted to the,
exactly.
So Spock gets character development in this. And even then it's more based off of existing character development. It's sort of fleshes out. It's character development because it's fleshing out something that happened to him. You're learning more about his upbringing. He doesn't change that much.
Right. No, that's exactly.
I'm not joking, Lee.
I'm not joking, Lee. I'm not joking, Lee.
God damn right.
I was trying to tell like Natalie about that episode tonight and she couldn't remember. And I was like, don't you remember? Like, I'm not joking, Lee.
I'm not joking, Lee. Yeah, it's pretty awesome. But yeah, 20 minutes is not a lot of time for character development. Timeline is exactly the same, except Spock doesn't exist. This is really interesting. I'm listing things.
This is a list. It's a listicle. This is a podcast version of a listicle.
Oh, this was in...
Rotoscope.
Rotoscope. I just wanted to say there's this one line that I like quoted the whole thing because I thought it was like pretty good. And this was in Land Beyond Time or whatever. Was it the
Yesteryear or Beyond the Farthest Star?
Beyond the Farthest Star.
Land Before Time.
Star Trek.
That's a depressing movie too.
Yeah, man. It is. So Spock goes, it is a magnetic organism without mass, but capable of symbiotic relationship with a host body. A starship, for instance. It is a form of primal energy, and it can utilize the electronic control system of a starship like the mind of a man. Pauses there. He goes, like the mind of a man. Uses the neural control. He goes, like, yeah. Like the mind of a man. Uses the neural control systems of the human body.
It's still very human centric.
It's mind of a man.
It's like Spock is commenting on humans.
Yeah, he like adds a pause there, but then the rest of the line is like, it has become the Enterprise, and we are only life support organisms in its body, like the white something muscles in human blood. And Captain, the magnetic flux
white
reading
corpuscles.
The what?
Corpuscles.
Corp.
With corpuscles.
Corpuscle.
That's what he says.
Corpuscles.
He means like white blood cells.
Corpuscles.
Corpuscle.
Okay. Not muscles. I was like, what's a blood muscle?
Corpuscle.
Blood muscles.
And Captain, the magnetic flux readings are higher. It is growing stronger. Building itself. That whole thing is pretty, like, that's pretty heavy shit, man. Like, you know, talking about like how it wants to become the Enterprise, and he like goes into this whole sort of philosophical sort of character motivation thing. I guess he's kind of explaining the whole thing to everyone, but you know, it doesn't talk down. Like I said, it doesn't talk down to
this.
Like,
this is literally, this is
Literally.
Why are you saying that? It's exposition. But this is I think, an example of good exposition. Mm. In other words, the purpose in this case for the exposition is they have a short time frame. They have, even with the animated format, they have limits to what they can animate. And the story he's trying to tell involves this sort of metaphysical conception that how would they display that visually even in an animated form? So Spock takes on the role of explaining that to the audience, but unlike some of the bad examples of exposition we've discussed in previous episodes,
this one's interesting.
You wrote down that whole quote because you found it so interesting to contemplate.
Yeah,
which is how you get that kind of metaphysical stuff. All it is Spock literally talking for a long time.
Yeah, but it was awesome. I was totally like drawn in.
Yeah, and that's one thing you can do. That's a great solution to the problem of having limited time and limited budget and, you know, constraints on a story, but to get a really powerful concept and idea across, you know. And I thought they did it really well there.
Kirk, his animation, he always looks like he's in on some joke the whole time. Yeah, he's just kind of like,
it sounds like it.
Yeah. He knows he's in a TV show.
And when they run, the running looks so awful. It's so stupid and deliberate. They just like, they slowly like get in run positions and they kind of like look like they're running, but they don't move fast.
But you know, I was actually really impressed. I agree with you, but I was really impressed with the, not impressed is maybe too strong a word, but I was really, I enjoyed the silhouette of young Spock running at night.
Oh, yeah.
In the desert.
That was fun.
It was kind of neat, you know?
Yeah.
It was like the framing of that was sort of, like you said earlier about the Uncanny Valley with the Enterprise shot. That was one of those ones where it kind of was like, what? This is like it was in a different TV show.
Yeah, it did. It looked like it was from a different TV show, but it looked cool.
It looked cool. I said cool, funny. Yeah,
explosions looked really stock too. I thought in the first episode, when there was like the ship was blowing up, there was just all these pow, pow, everywhere. And then like some of the animation cells looked like it looked like you could see bits of dust on them.
Yeah, 100%. Especially on the end, at the end when at the end of I think it was Beyond the Farthest Star when the Enterprise is when they're like, we're gonna go star charting and the Enterprise is flying away. You can see Plex on the piece of plastic they use that the Enterprise sprite is printed on, and they're kind of like moving it, and those Plex are just moving with it.
And
I think I seriously think some guy was pointed it out and was like, hey Charlie, did you see this Plex? And you can see them on the TV. And then Charlie's like, say this stars. It's called Star Trek.
Star Trek.
It's just stars. It's like, why are there like four stars moving in the identical vector?
Right.
Don't ask too many questions. Pay attention to the stars.
Just look at the stars.
I told you a million times, Timothy. Don't task me.
Timothy.
I gave you this job because my sister said I had no choice. You're my nephew. Don't task me. You're working on Star Trek, for God's sake.
Star Trek. Won't know the difference. You give them some neck pinches and some pointy ears, and that's all they care about.
It's foreheads.
Bunch of savages.
So the voice actors must have been able to bust out like three episodes like a day or at least on these, because there's not that much. I don't know. The dialogue, like, I don't know. It just seems like it's got a lot of like time sometimes in between things happening, sort of. I don't know. It seems like you could make a lot of episodes in a day. I know it always takes longer than you think it would to make something.
Well,
but like, example, this versus an episode of like The Simpsons or something.
They recorded all their lines and they just sent them.
Right, I guess that is right. So
they sit down and record them all in a row without having anybody, you know.
Maybe you think like, how many episodes do you think they did?
It was only the first one where they were all together interacting.
Well, like for sure, like The Simpsons, they get all together and stuff.
No,
right?
Most of them they don't.
Yeah, they don't do that.
Most of them they don't. No. Yeah,
I've heard of shows like not where they don't get together. They just mail them in. But I thought some shows.
No, it's the opposite. It's the majority of shows the people are recording individually.
That's what I was saying. Well, at least I heard a lot of shows. I thought some of them didn't.
I think Archer records with the people in the same room. It might be Archer that likes to do that or tries to do that with everybody actually there so they can play off of each other. I could be wrong about that, but I think it was Archer. Whereas the vast majority of shows, the animated shows, the people are actually recording separately. Even if they're like hanging out together, they're still recording their lines separately you know, as opposed to being all recording simultaneously, you know, like Justin Roiland, you'll see him recording his Rick lines and then his Morty lines. And, you know,
it's kind of weird. It's kind of weird how that can all work together.
Or there was that time that they had Werner Herzog came in and he was the guy, you know, who wanted to cut off
the guy,
you know, the penis.
Yep.
And Dan Harmon tells a story about how he came in. They were, you know, amazed that he agreed to do it. And he came in and did his lines and said a bunch of funny stuff about that. But then he, like, wanted to hang out. He was like, is it okay if I sit upon the couch? You know?
And they were like, yeah.
They didn't know what to do. They were just like, oh, okay.
I'm some sort of creature. Could you show me what does my character look like?
By the way,
alien creature.
There were two seasons, apparently, of the original.
This is going to be rich.
Of the original He-Man show. Two seasons. You know how many episodes were there? I'm not going to say guess because then you'll be like, I don't know what, 500?
95.
131.
Ah.
That's 65.
There's only two.
65 episodes per season.
They just I think they just made a bunch and then kept replaying.
Unless
them
seasons
kids are dumb.
Unless seasons are like 3 years long. I don't know. It says
they pump them out because that was the same thing.
Episodes were really short. They're even shorter than the Star Trek episodes.
And back in the day, remember, you know, the like Gunsmoke and shit, where they would have like 45 episodes a year.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
They just worked those people
or
into
like,
the fucking
like,
ground.
Yeah, like Gilligan's Island, like all that shit. Like they did.
Star Trek had a good amount of shit. Amount of they had, and also more time because each of the episodes
they
was like 54 minutes.
They hold a good amount of show. Oh, that was dangerous. Sorry.
Bah.
Not that voice. I really didn't. I felt bad about that.
It was mostly okay.
Mostly.
He's only mostly dead.
It was sort of a Polynesian witch doctor. Maybe that's not good.
See, they would have that on Star Trek in the 60s.
In the 60s.
They would definitely have it on TOS.
But it
would have
been
TOS would be even worse.
But it would be progressive somehow for the time.
Okay, progressive for in the 60s means not good now.
So yeah, right. Yeah, okay. Right.
But TNG had that weird season, the first couple seasons where every now and then you'd be like, okay, this is way, way worse than anything they would have even dreamed of on the 60s Star Trek. It was just like the 80s was weird where they would have that one episode with that. I won't even mention it. There's just suffice to say, everyone listening to this understands that there are some problematic episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation early on.
Speaking of Mr. Belvedere, don't you think James Doohan could have played Mr. Belvedere?
Chris Hewitt?
He could have done it.
Chris Hewitt? James Doohan.
Mr. Belvedere sat on his balls once.
Okay, but okay.
He was filming an episode. He sat on his balls.
James Doohan was Canadian.
Yeah, and he was missing part of his finger from D-Day.
That means Day-Day.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he was in fucking.
He was a pilot.
D-Day.
He was like a Canadian pilot.
Yeah.
Wow. It's a bad motherfucker.
Yeah, he's a bad motherfucker.
Shatner was Canadian too.
Yeah, that's right. He was Canadian.
And Nimoy was from Boston.
It's easier for Canadian people to pretend to be Scottish. They cannot pretend to be.
Oh my goodness! I've got ketchup all over my fingers.
My
fingers. Oh, it's getting late. I should get in my car and go home.
Is that a Boston?
Yeah, that's how they talk. Get my car.
And how do they say cock?
Get a car in my car.
It's hard to do.
Macaque. A car in my car with macaque.
All the sort of like northeastern. The northeastern accents are all sort of difficult because they're similar, but like there's all these subtleties. So like, like Boston versus like Brooklyn versus you know, like Philadelphia. It's all weird.
The only thing I can I don't know what a Philadelphia accent is other than they say ass funny. They go like aish.
Yeah,
they're
right.
Like, aish.
When you were wrestling with Mike that time, and those 8 year old kids walked by, and they were watching you, and they were like, kick his ace.
Yeah, right.
Kick his ace.
All right, I think we've exhausted everything for the evening on It's Got Star Trek. So
they did do that.
It was really awesome.
We're gonna log off here and kick each other's aces. But if you have any questions or feedback, please contact us at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com.
Not feedbag.
Feedback.
Not tack bag.
Feedback.
Not
back tack.
It's kind of like
back tack.
When they, in school, they tell you you should give back to your community. It's a subset of that. It's called feedback.
It's sort of
a reverse feeding. It's like you vomit into other people's mouths.
If you don't like our podcast, you can listen to a different podcast.
You can feed you can pay a fee of your D and put it in a bag.
You can also email us at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com with comments and questions and ideas for TV shows that you want to produce together. We can all get together and produce a television
show.
What's this?
If you want us to discuss a particular topic, we can take requests as well.
Is also true. We could take requests.
Anything.
What is this I hear of a television show?
Star Trek or otherwise.
Or, as Dan is very confused about this, all I'm doing is introducing the idea that we have now a very large listenership at this stage.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps.
And there is
a great deal of people out there who are creative crowd of people.
And they have a really good idea for a television program. And it could be have nothing to do with Star Trek, just a television program, and that they know Hollywood producers, and they know people with lots of money and all that. All they need is for us to hang out with them and piggyback on the idea and get credit for it.
All they need is to close their eyes and wish it for it to be true, and it will become so. That's all it takes. That and money.
Okay. Feedback@itsgotstartrek.com. I'll probably be talking more after this in the post whatever. So you'll hear my voice again.
We're going to keep talking. Second. Let's keep
These
talking.
These guys are going to keep talking
I wanna do
with
this,
each other.
I want to do this TV show. I'm into that.
I'm all really right. psyched about this.
So please send in ideas for
Better
a TV show.
Better not be fucking with me.
Like this Dan, is all very
Dan's
good.
Dan's got dibs on the first producible TV show idea. And then we'll
Sweet.
We don't know what we're talking about next week. It'll be related to Star Trek. It'll be interesting. It'll be fucking out of this world. I'll
It'll
tell
be
you that
about
much.
Q.
And might, Q? Jesse wants to talk about Q.
Q and
we might
you.
Talk about Q. We might talk about something totally different.
Q and you.
The galaxy is wide open.
You did it.
I did it.
Good night.
We're dropping out of orbit. We're falling into the dead sun.
Apply full power. Obey me. Slow. Accelerate. Do not destroy the ship. Obey. Obey. Obey.
Stand by. To activate warp drive unit.
No, don't.
Activate warp drive.
Activated, Captain.
Please, don't.
Is it gone?
Affirmative. It fled the ship when it thought we would crash into the dead star.